This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA plus community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Saturday Magazine, sponsored by Velocity Rewards,
your award-winning loyalty program for Virgin Australia's frequent flyers.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Saturday Magazine, Joy 94.9. Tass.
Macca, it seems like we're actually doing the rounds of our journalists this morning.
Well, independent journalists.
Absolutely. So we're about to speak with Matt Holden from The Age. But before I bring Matt on, he wrote an interesting piece last week, an opinion piece that was published in the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, I believe, an opinion piece that was entitled, Adani is not about jobs and never really was. Good morning, Matt. How are you?
I'm well, Tass. How are you?
Very well, thank you. So if Adani's not really about jobs, what is it about?
It seems to me to have become a kind of, as I pointed out in my piece, another episode in the culture war, if you like. It became emblematic of something, it wasn't being about for or against Adani. It was about being for or against jobs for ordinary Australians, I think, and the conservative side of politics have been able to develop this narrative that, it's only people in the inner cities who care about climate change, people out in the real world, which is, I think, in the opinion piece I described as central Queensland, care about much more basic things in their lives, like jobs and their kids' future and their own economic security. And I feel like Adani has become a kind of, political wedge to range to sections of society against each other, which don't necessarily aren't necessarily against each other. We have interests in common.
So the popular vernacular about this issue or narrative about this issue is that it's really Adani's become very much symbolic about climate politics, and in fact, what you're saying is something a little bit different than that. You're saying that it's actually become symbolic of the left versus the right, almost. Is that right?
I think so. Or, if we want to call it the left versus the right, or progressive people versus ordinary people, however you want to sort of characterise those two groups, it seems to have become like another form of identity politics, almost, in a way, too. One of the things in the lead-up to the election, one of the moments that struck me as being pretty awkward was the march on those coal towns by people opposed to the mines from the south. I mean, I understand people's desire to take action about things they believe in, but it also looked, I thought that was a kind of really bad look that played into that narrative, if you like. The greenies from down south marching into the town full of hardworking coal miners who just wanted jobs, kind of thing. That seemed emblematic of the thing to me as well.
Of course, Matt, interesting thing is that while Adani was bubbling away and everybody was focused on Adani, several other coal mines in neighbouring sort of areas
were approved.
And nobody's batted an eyelid about those. So perhaps Perhaps you are right that that Adani had become about something else. I wonder whether racism was at play here at all. What's your thoughts about that?
Racism against Adani because it's a sort of Indian company or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that came up and there was a kind of unfortunate remark by Tanya Plibersek, I guess, where she said that, I mean, she drew attention to the fact that it was an Indian company when I guess what we're really, I mean, the real point is that it's a big multinational mining company, whether they're based in India or London or the United States, the effect is the same, isn't it, I guess. There was also another interesting point after the election when I think the mayor of one of those towns up there, Townsville, wrote a piece saying, Melbourne, we need to talk. I don't know if you saw that. And the point of that was that, you know, the coal was going to bring energy wealth to the villages of India and Bangladesh, which is arguable. But again, there was that narrative of the hardworking people up there who want to do the right thing versus us down here in Melbourne.
So some of my reading, of course, is that India's and the Indian government is very busily, you know, doing its best to capture as much solar and other renewable energy that it can. So is there really a market for coal, Australian coal in the long term?
It seems doubtful. I mean, I think one of the recent story talked about how, you know, Adani had contracts to supply electricity to Bangladesh via its coal-fired power plants in India. But I think anyone who's seen 2040 can see that there were already other solutions to energy poverty in those parts of the world, with like localized solar grids that are much more flexible and much quicker to get up and will bring energy to people in villages in India and Bangladesh much more quickly than a giant, electricity grid that may never be built anyway.
What sort of a factor, Matt? We know that the last federal election, if you took Queensland out of the total, Australia voted Labor. Over the coalition, yet in Queensland, obviously Labor was mauled, and of course seats where Adani really played out, let alone where the mine's going to be, Labor were savaged. What do you see in terms of, you know, the politics of this? We've already seen people sort of starting to change, or Labor politicians starting to change the narrative a little bit. What's your thought on that?
Well, we saw Labor go to the election with the Liberals' climate change policy anyway. After the Liberals dumped Turnbull and dumped the National Energy Guarantee, Shorten took it up. So that, I guess, they succeeded in dragging the debate about climate change in that direction, not in the direction of more radical, or not radical, but, you know, more long-term action, if you like. The other thing about Queensland is, if you look at elections in Queensland over the last 20 years, it's pretty volatile, isn't it? You know, they threw the state Labor government out less than 7 lower house members or something, and then 3 years later they were back with a majority. So it must operate on a hair trigger up there that doesn't perhaps apply in other parts of Australia.
And Matt, of course, last week we heard the Queensland Premier, Anastasia Palaszczuk, really pretty much read the Riot Act to Adani and said that she would hold them to account if they didn't deliver the jobs that they had promised. What are your thoughts on that one?
Well, I guess we have to wait and see what the jobs are and can you hold them to account, really? Or is that more politics? What are you going to do, like, if they don't build a mine there and don't, you know, produce thousands of jobs, are you going to say, well, you're a naughty boy, go out and go home? I don't know.
It's like being thrashed with a wet lettuce, Tess.
Well, I would have thought perhaps an invisible lettuce, because there is no power to really do anything.
Yeah,
what can you do? No. Take away the license? That's not going to happen.
I thought her reaction after the election was pretty interesting too, because she had a bit of whatever you want to call it, then a bit of a fit then, when she sort of demanded that the process get moving. You know, we've had the election, we voted for the coal jobs, let's get on with it, please. And basically demanded that her own bureaucrats expedite the approvals anyway, you know.
Well, I mean, of course, I've heard commentators say that was partly a knee-jerk reaction, a bit of let's get on with this because this is going to affect our electoral sustainability.
Certainly sounded like it to me. It was like, okay, we you lost the federal election over this one. I'm not going to wear it as well. So let's get it moving.
Well, look, we're pretty much out of time, Matt. I want to thank you for writing about this and looking at it from a different angle. We're going to cover some more in the future. We're actually looking for also some comment from indigenous folk in the area to give their take on it. It's a really interesting thing, and I did notice after the federal election, the state government have been very happy with the bureaucrats you know, hastening slowly, and then all of a sudden, oh my God, you know, you need to make a decision. You know, we're giving you, you know, 48 hours, and, you know, then, you know, wave the lettuce leaf at Adani.
Labor were playing both sides of it before the election, and afterwards they've just fallen into line with it, basically.
Yeah, it's called duplicity.
Mass, before you leave us, do you think Adani will actually happen?
I don't know. Some people think it won't. I mean, I quoted John Cregan in the piece I wrote.
Yes.
Who thinks the economics don't stack up, and that, you know, Adani might have been happy to have the approval sort of.
Oh, I think we've lost you. Oh.
Ah.
Well, that was Matt Holden.
It was.
Who's an age journalist, a Fairfax journalist.
Yeah, Asia, I've cut it off.
Seem to have lost him midair. Perhaps some of those people who don't like what he has to say came in and cut him off, Macca.
I don't know. Perhaps he's talking on a renewable energy phone test.
It's a pretty, Macca, it's a pretty interesting topic, though.
It is, and we're going to deal with this again in a couple of weeks.
I think we have to, because our community is very deeply, deeply interested in sustainability issues. And this is connected to all of that debate, I think, at the end of the day.
Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9, proudly sponsored by Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.